Hello, this is Terry Burdick reading to you today from the Weekend Commercial News from Saturday and Sunday, January 31st to February 21st, 2026. We'll start today on our front page with all the news that is relevant to our front page. We'll take a look at what else is going on locally. We'll expand our look to look at things regionally and across our world. As presented in today's paper, we'll take a break about midday or mid-read, I suppose, to take a look at our obituaries. So let's start with the front page headline, Vermilion County Man Found Guilty of Murder. This comes to us from commercial news reporter Christy Jankowski, Dateline Danville. A Vermilion County man is found guilty of murdering a two-year-old. The Vermilion County Circuit Court jury returned a guilty verdict on Friday for 32-year-old Dantrell Johnson. The jury found him guilty of first-degree murder following the death of 2-year-old Callie Sago. Johnson was charged with 3 counts of murder with intent to kill or injure on September 28, 2025. Opening statements began on Wednesday after his final pretrial on January 21st. Court records indicate Johnson was offered a plea but turned it down. During the trial, the state presented its exhibits of evidence, along with witness testimony, and heard from Dr. Channing Petrak, an expert in her field. Then on Thursday, more testimony was heard, and a guilty verdict was returned from the jury on Friday afternoon. Attorney General Kwame Rowell released a statement following Friday's verdict. While nothing will change the horrific events that ultimately took the life of an innocent toddler, I hope today's verdict brings some healing to Callie Sago's family, Raul said. I would like to thank the Vermilion County State's Attorney's Office for their continued partnership in protecting residents and holding those who commit violent crimes accountable. Raul said in the release that Johnson was in charge of babysitting the 2-year-old while her mother was at work on August 11, 2022. Around 8:40 that evening, the Danville Police Department officers and paramedics arrived at the residence located in the 1200 block of Garden Drive after getting a 911 call from Johnson. He stated the toddler was unresponsive. It is documented that immediately Callie Sago was taken to a local hospital and then airlifted to a Peoria Pediatric Hospital for care. She died on September 11, 2022. The Peoria County Coroner's Office investigated the death and noted her postmortem examination showed signs of violent abuse, including brain hemorrhaging, internal organ damage, and rib fractures. The coroner stated her death was caused by blunt force trauma from physical abuse. Today's verdict delivers justice for a child whose life was taken too soon by unspeakable acts of violence, Vermilion County State's Attorney Jacqueline Lacey said. We're grateful to the jurors and to the witnesses who came forward, especially the young sibling whose courage and strength in testifying were extraordinary, and to the dedicated members of the Danville Police Department whose tireless work made this verdict possible. Johnson will be sentenced on March 23rd. All records of information were obtained using the Vermilion County Court case search portal and a media release from the attorney. In more local news, water rate hike request filed by Christy Jankowski. If you pay your water bill to Illinois Ameren Water, expect that bill to go up after the company filed a rate request with the ICC on Tuesday. The proposed rate hike will cost customers using 3,500 gallons of water an extra $14, and for wastewater customers an increase of $28. Illinois American Water shared on their website they have filed a request of $577 million in water and wastewater system investments that will be made through 2027 to continue providing clean, safe, reliable, and affordable service. The increase includes $421 million for infrastructure improvements, $156 million for wastewater system infrastructure improvements to be made over 2 years, as well as a replacement of around 42 miles of pipelines, storage tank upgrades, wells, pump stations, hydrants, wastewater plants, meters, and more. Jim Chilson with the Citizens Utility Board wrote a media release after learning about the rate increase. Sarah Moskowitz, CUB Executive Director, shared, "This company, a rate hike machine, has already burdened customers with 3 increases totaling $230 million over the last decade, and now in Illinois. American has its hands in the customers' pockets once again," says Sarah Moskowitz, CUB Executive Director. "An average rate hike of $14 a month for water and $28 a month for wastewater will be a hardship for customers." Moskowitz said the water company has pulled in more than $1 billion in profits in 2024 and $873 million in 9 months of 2025. CUB will challenge this money grab, and we will continue to work in Springfield for legislative reforms. Example, Senate Bill 75, to stop Illinois American from plundering customers, Chilson wrote in the release. CUB is also concerned about what this increase will mean for customers of Aqua Illinois, the second largest private water utility in the state. Illinois American is currently seeking regulatory approval to purchase Aqua. CUB said the water company has won $230 million in rate hikes over the last decade, with $110 million in 2024, $85 million in 2022, and $35 million in 2016. For years, Illinois American customers have contacted CUB to complain about excessive water bills connected to favorable legislation water companies have pushed in past years, CUB said in a release. CUB claims the company charges a qualifying infrastructure plant fee. Illinois American and Aqua Illinois, the state's two biggest private water utilities, can buy up water and wastewater systems across the state and charge their customers to cover 100% of the acquisition cost, the release says. CUB Water Tracker, CUB's special online center monitoring the problem, found that these for-profit companies have purchased 61 systems since 2013 when state legislators passed a law that allows these water utilities to pass acquisition costs, $411.5 million and counting, onto their customers. CUB said Senate Bill 75 would eliminate the QIP fee and move the charges to water utility shareholders when they buy a local water or wastewater system. They add that the parent companies of Illinois American and Aqua are planning to merge in a deal that is set to close in the first quarter of 2027. For more information about CUB, call their consumer hotline at 1-800-669-5556 or visit citizensutilityboard.org. Illinois American Water does not say they offer programs of assistance for those with low income with their... American Water does say they offer programs of assistance for those with low income with their H220 help to other programs, budget billing, and flexible payment plans. More in Illinois front page news, Illinois residents, how to see if you have cash to claim. This too from Christy Jankowski. Check this weekend to see if you have some extra cash coming from National Unclaimed Property Day. The Illinois State Treasurer, Michael Frerix, shared how to find out if you have missing money by sharing the iCash website. This Sunday, February 1st, is National Unclaimed Property Day, and I hope people will celebrate by checking out to see if they or their loved ones have missing money to claim, Frerix said. If you want to celebrate early, that's okay too. The iCash site is available anytime, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. He said around 1 in 4 adults find out they have cash or unclaimed property by visiting the site and encourages people to check it throughout the year. It's a good idea to check the names of family members and friends as well as your own name because you might find some unexpected treasures. If you find something for your relatives or neighbors, you can use our website's Family and Friends Share feature to let them know, he said. We work hard to return missing money and unclaimed property to the rightful owners. The proof is in our record-breaking numbers over the years. Putting money back in your warm hands is better than keeping it in our cold bank vaults. If you haven't cashed a rebate check, maybe have an unpaid life insurance claim, an overlooked or forgotten bank account, or possibly the contents of an abandoned safe deposit box, it might be there. When items cannot be returned to their owner, banks and companies are required to give them to the Illinois State Treasurer's Office. Frerix said for one man in McLean County checking for unclaimed property, he ended up with a check to him for around $27,000. The money came from a cryptocurrency account which belonged to his late wife. While the man tried to access the account after her death, he wasn't able to. After the company turned the funds over to the state, according to Frerick's office, he recalled a friend telling him about the unclaimed property program, so he checked the iCash website. After he filed the claim, the man was able to get the money in November and plans to use it during his retirement. It was amazing. I could have that experience, he said. The Unclaimed Property Division was very helpful with me at each step. Frerix said his work with state lawmakers has made the process easier by eliminating red tape and returning the funds through the Enhanced Money Match Program. There's also a Spanish language website. You can see some of the items in an unboxing video series online with baseball cards, jewelry, and more. The National Association of Unclaimed Property Administrators, NAUPA, started having an Unclaimed Property Day on February 1, 2021. And in Illinois, Frerich's office said he's returned more than $2.4 billion in unclaimed property since he took office in 2015. And just last year, around 545,000 people were returned almost $294 in missing funds, with the average claim being around $539. I think that number should have been they returned $294 million, with the average claim being around $539. Our weekend edition today is primarily filled with just the front page news that we have heard already, and a lot of sports with very little in the middle. So we're going to take some time to take a look at the editorial page today. Our primary editorial column comes with this headline, "A Tiny Solution to a Big Problem." A drive through some Danville neighborhoods yields plenty of evidence that city officials continue their efforts to raise dilapidated houses. The campaign eliminates eyesores and safety hazards, but also creates chunks of empty space that could be put to good use. The solution might come in a local effort to create tiny houses, houses with roughly 500 square feet of living space to fill in the vacant lots and give local residents an opportunity to get back on their feet. Hope Garrett, CEO of Education Personnel Credit Union, heads a plan to start a nonprofit organization, Tiny Homes of Vermilion County, that will oversee the construction of the houses. According to the group's Facebook page, organizers hope the state will soon approve the proposed 501c3 operation. Danville officials and Garrett already have had discussions about using city-owned lots to construct 5 to 7 of the small houses. It's not just about handing over a set of keys and saying good luck, Garrett said in a September story about the project in CU Today, a newsletter website for credit unions. We're trying to address the full scope of what leads to homelessness, whether it's mental health issues, substance abuse, or just falling on hard times. The proposal calls for tenants to pay around $300 a month in rent. The tenants will be offered incentives for such things as completing job training, going through counseling, and taking other steps to help ensure their independence. In return, a portion of the rent would be put aside and could be refunded for the tenants to use as a down payment on a permanent home, according to the CU Today article. Tiny Homes of Vermilion County would seek grants and other donations to pay for the construction. Other communities are working on similar projects as a way to combat homelessness and help residents to return to the workforce. Urbana officials, along with Carl Health, Champaign County Healthcare Consumers, Sola Gracia Farm, and others, plan to construct up to 30 tiny houses in North Urbana. The site will include on-site management and various types of assistance for homeless residents as well as medically fragile residents. First Mennonite Church of Champaign-Urbana also had constructed and operated 9 tiny houses by 2021 to help those in need. Programs such as the one proposed by Garrett do more than make beds available on a night-to-night basis. The aim is to resolve the root causes of homelessness, to provide people with the tools and services they need to succeed. The idea already has gained support from city officials and seems to be a good way for other local organizations and churches to pool resources to create a larger, more effective way to help residents in need. Homelessness isn't just one story, Garrett told CU Today. We have folks coming out of the local prison with nowhere to go. We have veterans coming out of the VA hospital who don't have housing. We have families that were just one paycheck away from being on the street. Tiny Homes of Vermilion County could help dozens of local residents begin a path to success while helping the city fill its growing number of vacant lots. It's an effort that deserves everyone's support. Well, we spoke a little in that last story about what's going on kind of in local homelessness and groups that are hoping to work there. Let's take a look a little bit more broadly at gauging potential wave election in Indiana nationally. The dateline is Indianapolis. President Donald J. Trump will not be on the Indiana ballot in this year's midterm cycle, but this election will be all about him. Nationally and here in Indiana, the midterms will be a referendum on his presidency, playing out in a series of state Senate primary races in May and in statewide and congressional races come November. Trump has attempted to move the levers of power by seeking new congressional maps. Some 21 state Senate Republicans joined a 31-19 majority to defeat that effort on December 11th, sending the president on a retribution campaign. This past week, Trump has endorsed primary challengers to Republican state senators Greg Walker, Greg Good, or is it Goody, Spencer Deary, Travis Holman, and Jim Buck, elevating obscure city councilors and county commissioners into what could be marquee races. The stakes for Trump are high. A series of polls taken before January 24th, the day federal agents fatally shot Veteran Affairs nurse Alex Preddy in Minneapolis, reveal that Trump's standing with Hoosier voters has been fluctuating but remains fairly strong. USA Today's List Wire had Trump's approval rating in Indiana at 51% on January 7th, a little less than a month after the Indiana Senate rejected the president's call to change the nation's congressional maps. Gallup reported his approval rating in Indiana in January at 57%, unchanged from 2025, and matching his 2024 plurality, while Newsweek had its January approval at 51%, with 44% disapproving. Morning Consult places Indiana approval in December at 49%, with 47% disapproving. A North Star Opinion Research poll posted in October revealed his ratings in Indiana were 42% favorable and 49% unfavorable. Nationally, the Real Clear Politics composite on Tuesday showed the president at a 43.3% favorable and 53.4% unfavorable ratings. A year into Trump's second term has been abnormal in a multitude of ways. He's been active militarily in Iran, Venezuela, the Caribbean, and Eastern Pacific. In Davos, Switzerland, he insulted NATO and European allies while making a tortured case to acquire Greenland, only to cave before returning home. The NATO alliance is stressed. In the homeland, Trump's assault on blue cities apparently making good on his threat made to U.S. generals and admirals in September to target the enemy within by using our cities as military training grounds has escalated. Strength in numbers analyst G. Elliot Morris is calling last Saturday's slaying of Preddy 17 days after the fatal shooting of Renee Good by a federal agent as a potential game changer. The ICE shootings are a tipping point, Morris said, and Donald Trump's approval on immigration has dropped 18 points since taking office, and support for abolishing immigration and customs enforcement has swung 50 points in September. Midterm elections are sure to carry considerable weight. Well, let's take a break from our news and look to our obituaries from those that were provided by Friday at 5 p.m. We have five today. Thelma Faye Frances Spencer. Thelma Faye Frances Spencer, 103, of Fithian, Illinois, passed away at her home surrounded by family on January 29th. A celebration of life will be held on Friday, February 6th at 2 p.m. at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Oakwood, and that's at 105 East South Main Street in Oakwood. Pastors Trevor Edding and Patty Wise will officiate. Thelma's burial will be in the Oakwood Cemetery. Visitation will be held from 1 to 2 p.m. on Friday at the funeral home. Memorial donations may be made to the Oakwood United Methodist Church, the Batestown United Methodist Church, or ICU Memories, care of Carrie Disney. Sylvia Sliva. Sylvia Ann Sliva, age 90, of Westville, passed away peacefully on January 30th at Hawthorne Inn in Danville, where she'd been a resident for the past 5 years. A visitation will be held from 10 to 11:30 a.m. on Tuesday, February 3rd at Sunset Funeral Home, Urbas Chapel, located at 414 South State Street in Westville. A funeral service will immediately follow at 11:30 that morning. Sylvia will be buried at the Saints Peter and Paul Cemetery. In lieu of flowers and other expressions of sympathy, donations may be made in Sylvia's name to the Westville Library or the Westville Depot. Online condolences, fond memories, and pictures can be shared with Sylvia's family on her tribute wall at sunsetfuneralhome.com. Carol J. Johnson. Carol Toy Johnson of Danville departed this life on January 20th at Adams Place in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. A service to celebrate the life of Carol Toy Johnson will be held at 10 a.m. on Saturday, February 7th at Emmanuel Lutheran Church on Bowman Avenue in Danville. Pastor James Yonkers will officiate. Carol's burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Park. Visitation will be held from 9 to 10 a.m. prior to the service on Saturday, also at Emmanuel Lutheran Church. Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center has been entrusted with arrangements. Memorials may be made to Emmanuel Lutheran Church or to the Lutheran Hour Ministries in St. Louis, Missouri. Sharla Ann Hutchinson. Sharla Ann Rogers Hutchinson, age 73, of Vetersburg, passed away on 2:20 p.m. on Thursday, January 22nd. Her services were held on Saturday the 31st at the Family and Friends Funeral Home of Wingate, with Brother Joel Whitehead officiating. Memorial contributions in Sharla's name can be made to the Montgomery County Animal Welfare League. Linda Lou Gardner. Linda Gardner passed away peacefully on January 29th at her home in Ridge Farm, surrounded by family. A visitation will be held from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. on Wednesday, February 4th at the Vermilion Grove Friends Church. A funeral service celebrating her life will immediately follow at the church, beginning at 2. The family asks that attendees of the services wear something sparkly and full of joy in honor of Linda. Joe and Mindy White will be officiating. She'll be laid to rest at the Vermilion Grove Cemetery following services. Memorial contributions in lieu of flowers can be written in her honor to the Vermilion Grove Friends Church. And that concludes our reading of this week's obituaries. Let's turn our attention now to the sports page. Well, let's start by congratulating our Christie Clinic Athletes of the Week, Aiden White. Westville junior Aiden White scored the winning basket as the Tigers beat Bismarck Henning Rossville Alvin 60-59 for the Vermilion County Tournament title and followed that up with 20 points in a win over Salt Fork on Tuesday. And Bracey Hurd. Salt Fork senior Bracey Hurd had 39 points overall in helping the Storm win their fifth straight Vermilion County title and also added 16 points in Wednesday's 62-57 double overtime win over Danville. Congratulations, our Student Athletes of the Week. In more local sports, Dak wakes up at right time. Jaguars hold on to beat Snappers. This article comes to us from the Danville Commercial News reporter, Marvin Holman. The Danville Area Community College boys basketball's winning streak has seen almost anything and everything. On Wednesday, the number 7th ranked Jaguars faced a new situation, trying to win a game against a 7-14 team that just broke a six-game losing streak on a day where Dak's offense and defense were sluggish for most of the game. They looked at the record and thought that they were going to walk all over them. And I said, in this conference, that just doesn't happen, Dak head coach Dejon Goward said. We have to go out and get the job done and beat teams in this league. Spoon River beat DMACC, or the Des Moines Area Community College, who is either first or second in the country, and that's a team to worry about. They challenged us in some ways we haven't been challenged for a while, but we have to be better and take on the challenges big or small and not overlook or take for granted. Down 32-31 at halftime, the Jaguars would rally late in the second half and pull away with a 73-64 win that makes the team 17-1 with 16 straight victories. Those last couple of minutes was one of the most fun parts of the season, Dak sophomore guard Blake Reed said. Even though it was close, we pulled it out, fought, and showed we're at the top for a reason. Teams are giving us their best shot all the time. We have to lock in and know who we are and believe in ourselves. At one point in the second half, the Snappers would go out on a six-point lead, but the Jaguars would come roaring back with Reed making some key three-pointers and the defense finding its way. I think the last couple of minutes we had defensive stops, and when we get defensive stops and get into transitions and the guys make shots, we are tough to beat, Goward said. We played the type of basketball we've been playing all season, but it took us 35 minutes to get there, to get to that point, which I would have preferred to happen in the first 5 minutes. If I can be honest, for 38 minutes of the game, they wanted it more. They played with an intensity that we didn't match. It wasn't because we couldn't, but I think it was because we thought it was an easy game. When you think something's easy, you don't go at things as hard and with the intent, and we were in a situation we were fighting for our lives. I haven't been shooting the ball very well, which is why I'm here for, Reed said. The team believes in me, and they keep telling me to shoot, but I'm in the gym and missing my shots, and it messes with you mentally. So I was trying to lock back in and get my shot back. In the end, coach trusted me, and my teammates trusted me to knock down shots, and that's what happened. Jordan Dickinson had 14 points for Dak, while Keaton Barnes had 11 points. Denzel Anotoe had 10, 9 rebounds and 3 blocks. Jeremiah Penechich had 8 points and 5 assists, and Jeremy Wilson had 7 points and 7 rebounds. The Jaguars will play Ren Lake today with the knowledge that Goward tried to show them, but now no for good. I've been telling them that, but I hope this game is what gets them to realize it, Goward said. We have an X on our back, and we have X's already for hosting the NJCAA tournament, and being ranked 6th makes that target even bigger. We're going to Ren Lake on Saturday, and I told the guys they're going to be ready for us. We can't perform like we did for 38 minutes and think we can win it at that place, so we will see. Well, it looks like the DAC women's basketball team is also having some success of late. Here's another article from Marvin Holman. DAC women win 2nd straight. For a portion of the season, Aaliyah Emers seemed to be the only one on offense for the Danville area community women's basketball team. But as players have returned from injury, Emers has returned to her familiar guard position, and with that, the Lady Jaguars have won 3 of their last 4 games. On Wednesday, DAC was able to beat Spoon River 70-56 for their 2nd straight win of the season, as Emers had 23 points, 11 rebounds, and 5 assists. It feels good to be able to get back in my spot and be comfortable where I know I can make us better, Emers said. I wanted to win. It was too close, so I had to get our team out of the hole and take it home. She's been able to adapt and play multiple positions, and we just want to make sure she's on the floor, DAC head coach Kyle Bent said. When she's out there and locked in, she's a good player for us. She got in a pretty good rhythm tonight. We ran some stuff, and I liked her matchups, especially in the 2nd half. The Lady Jaguars were only up 45-41 before they outscored the Snappers 25-15 in the 4th of Wednesday's game, which was the first for the team since January 10th. We haven't been home for quite a while, Bent said. We hosted the Vermilion County Tournament, and that's a great thing, but it forces us to be on the road, and that is fine because we're about to experience 4 home games in a row. We're happy to just be able to get back, get a routine in practice, and play where we practice and getting a little bit of rhythm. It's always nice to play at home. Ultimately, we're here to win games, and winning ugly is better than a pretty loss, and we'll take it. In more college basketball news, Illini's win streak goes to 10. Keaton Wagler had 22 points and 8 assists, and number 9 Illinois men's basketball extended its winning streak to 10 games with a 75-66 victory over Washington on Thursday night. David Mirkovic added 19 points and 6 rebounds, and Ben Humricus had 14 points for the Illini, who are now 18-3 overall, 9-1 in the Big Ten, and they have the longest active win streak in the conference. The Illini's 10-game winning streak is the longest in Brad Underwood's 9 years as a coach and the longest for Illinois since it won 10 in a row to open the 2012-2013 season. Wagler has scored in double figures in 13 straight games and in 18 games overall this season. Freshman Hans Steinbach had 15 points and 12 rebounds for Washington, which has lost 6 of 8. Wesley Yates III had 13 points, and Zoom Diallo had 12 points and 10 assists for the Huskies, who scored the game's first 7 points. The Illini's responded with a 10-0 run, but that put them ahead for good. Some scores from around our prep basketball this past weekend. In prep girls basketball, it was Salt Fork 62, Danville 57, Oakwood 37, Westville 32, Watsika 54, and AP Armstrong Potomac 29, North Vermilion had 50, and West Vigo 35. Looking ahead to next week, on Monday we've got girls prep basketball. All of these games start at 5:30. We've got Cisna Park at Schlarman Academy, Armstrong Potomac at Houston area, Salt Fork at Watsika, Iroquois West at Oakwood, Westville at Chrisman, Bismarck Henning Rossville Alvin at Danville, and in prep boys swimming, we have Fountain Central at Seeker, and that meet is at 5 p.m. That just about wraps up our time together. Let's take a look at our 7-day forecast. We're only going to capture about 5 days of it, though, because it's already Monday. Looks like a much warmer week than we've been experiencing. Our highs will be in the upper 20s and right around that 30-degree mark for most of the week. It looks like Monday will be mostly cloudy and chilly. Same for Tuesday, high of 30s and the lows in those upper teens, lower 20s. Wednesday and Thursday, looks like we can have a little bit of morning snow, but they don't expect a lot of accumulation, with a high of 27 on Wednesday and a high of 31 on Thursday. Our low for Wednesday will be 11. Thursday comes in at 29, so a pretty balmy day compared to what we've had. On Friday, we're having a wintry mix in the afternoon. Our high will be 32 with a low of 13 degrees. This has been Terry Burdick reading to you from the Commercial News for the weekend edition for January 31st and February 1st. I can't believe it's already February. Everybody have a great week, and I look forward to reading again with you soon.